Hi, Dan.
Hello, Jason.
How's your week?
My week is busy.
Big
busy
week.
Week.
Big week. Huge week.
Big week. Huge week. Huge, huge week.
Hmm.
Oh, it's been an interesting ride so far.
So your book got published officially.
Yeah. Now I still don't entirely believe it sometimes because I've checked like once or twice in my local bookstore and they don't have it. So therefore, it does not exist.
But people are tweeting pictures of your book.
Those people are not real people.
In bookstores.
Those people are clearly paid actors.
Mm. Almost certainly.
The imposter syndrome is strong.
Mm. And all of those Kindle orders shipped out, the iBook orders didn't.
Yeah, that was an interesting development. Sorry to all those of you listening who ordered an iBook version and it didn't arrive immediately or had some problems.
Are they out now?
They should be out now. If you're still having problems, I suggest contacting the iBook support team. Maybe they can help. But I mean, you know, we know several software developers who could probably tell you that launches often don't go smoothly.
Yeah, and I can tell you from our experience back in the Macworld Super Guide ebook series days, there's so many different ways to mess up an ebook. Your publisher found one of them. Oh, well.
Yep, it's an interesting...
I think it created more drama situation for your release, because day one was release, and day two was, will the iBook come out now?
Yeah. Well, you know, you want to build conflict. That's a successful component of any drama. You need a little challenge to overcome, right? Otherwise, it's just boring.
Oh, tell me more, novelist Dan Morin.
And I think we briefly alluded to this maybe on the Acapulco episode, but I know a lot of people have asked whether or not there will be an audiobook. There will be an audiobook. It's coming out in July.
I think we briefly alluded to it because you hadn't heard, and then like after we recorded the episode, you heard that there will be one. I think
yes, it was the timing was a little, it was not quite, didn't line up perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. So for people who are wondering, we did say that we had already talked about your book a lot on last week's Secret Podcast.
Yes.
And that was because we recorded that Incomparable episode that dropped this week, right before we did that. So for those who are curious to hear much, much more about Dan's path to having a book published, I commend to you the Incomparable episode from this week, the special episode that we posted on Tuesday.
It's
all
special.
In there. It's an hour long about Dan.
We covered most of it.
I think
most
so.
Most of the important stuff.
I think so. I've enjoyed seeing the rollout. Like you know, you got to do what you can. You got to do as much as you possibly can to get people.
I hope I haven't annoyed too many people with my attempts at self-promotion. I'm new at this. It's going to die down after a little bit.
Yeah, but it needs to be done.
It does need to be done because you know what? No one else is going to do it for you. This is what I've learned. It's like it's nice to have support systems, and sometimes you get someone who's really invested in helping you. But at the end of the day, as people have told me, no one is ever going to care about it as much as you are going to care about it. So you better be prepared to put in the sweat equity.
Yeah, that's I learned that early on when somebody for computer books even somebody said to me, don't expect your publisher to promote your book. Like they might, but they probably won't because they got lots of books. You got to do it yourself. You got to do your own heavy lifting. You got to do it.
Yeah. And even if they do, they may not do as much or in the areas that you want them to. Or,
right.
You know, at best, it's sort of a synergy where it's like you hit up some certain areas, your publisher hits up certain areas, and between the two of you, you cover a lot of ground. So you're always going to have to do something no matter what, unless you're probably like Stephen King or somebody, but even then they just send you around to do stuff. So you still have to provide like talent and performance, right?
Yeah. It's one of those things where like I was asking myself, would your publisher have, made stickers?
No.
Gotten a design for the symbols of your, of the two warring empires in your book? No. Stamps? For stamping things? No. But you did.
Yeah. Well, you know, I invest. You gotta spend money to make money, Jason. That's what.
Interesting.
I'm gonna try to see how many venture capital like lines I can spout during this episode.
It's good. It's good. Is there more book news? There's other stuff going on too. It's not all about your book this week.
No, it's not. It could be, I guess, but it's not. It's not all about my book. Yeah, there's other stuff going on. What else is going on?
Well, we're working on the Six Colors newsletter magazine monthly thingy. It should be out soon.
Yeah, that seems about that time.
Just a warning, yeah. I think it's all written now. I haven't checked to see if you wrote your back page column.
I said I wrote my column like yesterday.
Yeah, but I haven't checked. And then you said you wrote it, but you also said that it was like super wacky even for you, and that fills me full of fear. So I haven't looked yet.
Okay. Well, don't look before the end of the show.
You sure? I was about to open it up. Okay, I won't. I won't. Then I'll just leave it for the people will be surprised when it happens.
Sometimes you hit a thread and you start pulling that thread and you don't stop for probably somewhat longer than you should.
And then you've got a big pile of thread and your scarf is gone.
Yeah. I don't know where it went.
But there's this thread here now. You can knit it into a scarf. Now. Oh?
Yeah, it seems like a lot of work.
I wrote a thing earlier this week. Seems like so long ago that I wrote it, but it was actually Monday.
Monday. Well, more innocent time.
I was sitting in the backyard and it was a nice warm day and that stopped. It's not hasn't been a nice warm day the last couple of days, but back on Monday, boy, those were the days. That was when summer was coming. So I wrote this thing.
Halcyon days.
That I think people who are listening to this, who are subscribers, and thank you for being subscribers, this is one of the things that I sweat about, which is this, what I call the subscription paradox. And it's the idea that one of the things that drives people away from subscribing to something is not liking it. Now, not liking it can be part of it, but it's not just that, wow, my phone, my landline that we only have because it's cheaper to have it is ringing off the hook today. You hear that? Oh, my God.
I cannot hear it, but okay, that's good. I take your word for it.
Well, if you hear it back there, then it's more garbage from garbage people who want to call a garbage phone number. Enjoy your garbage, everybody. I'm gonna have to unplug that thing or turn off the ringers on all of it. The only person who calls that I ever would answer is my father-in-law calls on Sunday nights because he wants to talk to us and the kids, and so he calls the landline so we can hand the phone around. And even that, I'm feeling like we should just tell him to not call and then just like unplug it.
Yeah, well, don't do that in the other order. Otherwise, it's a very different signal that you're sending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny because my mom was complaining the other day that the landline, she says, is there some way they can tell when we get home? Because I always feel like we walk in the door and the robocalls immediately start coming in. I'm like, as far as I know, no. But
no, I think they're calling all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You can't prove they're not calling when you're not there. Yeah. So they're probably just calling all the time.
Yeah.
I get it on the cell phone now too. I don't answer anything on my iPhone unless I recognize the number or the, you know, it's one of my contacts.
I get some of those, but not as regularly. I would sign up for Nomo Robo or something like that. But I get so few of them that it's not worth spending.
I get a few every day. I feel like two or three these days. Yeah, it's really ramped up. A lot of times they're I don't want to say clearly spammy numbers, but they're probably spammy numbers because they have my area code my exchange.
Yeah, those are the spammiest. Yeah, and they can't be blocked because they're spoofed and they could be real numbers. So
right. I have what's the other one? Hiya, which is one of the spam filtering call apps, and it doesn't pick up on those. So
yeah, well, I just read a piece. I think Gruber linked to a piece about it that basically what Nomo Robo says is we can flag those as probably spam, but we can't block them because it could be legit because it's a spoofed number. It's not a real number. I don't know how they're
going to get on
top of that. It's really not good. Anyway, what was I saying? I was talking about subscriptions.
We went the long way around. We were talking about subscriptions.
Yeah. So the problem with subscriptions is not that you don't like the stuff. I mean, that's an issue. Like if you are reading something or watching something or whatever, and you're like, yeah, this isn't working for me anymore. Sure. That's a natural, like the product doesn't fit. But a lot of people like the product, but the reason that they cancel is because they feel like they aren't taking full advantage of it. This is the stacked up issues of the New Yorker thing, where like every time you read the New Yorker, you like it, but you can't read a whole issue, and then the next issue comes, and you start to feel like you're not getting the most out of your subscription. And so you cancel because it feels, I think psychologically the reason this happens is because it feels like you're not making, you're not getting your money's worth, and so you're going to stop. You could argue that if you enjoy the parts that you read, you are getting your money's worth and you could continue. Right. But I think what happens a lot of times is people feel overwhelmed, and so they and they can't get through it all, and they feel bad about it, and so then they say, I'm going to stop. And so when we were doing, when the print version of PC World shut down way before the Macworld print edition did, and so that was the first one of those that I had to work on, transitioning everybody from print to digital. And we were working on what the digital magazine looked like, because one of the reasons that magazines are sized the way they are historically is price. Like you could make a 500 page magazine, but then you got to print that many pages, and that's, paper is expensive and shipping is expensive. So you always, every page has a cost. And with digital, that's essentially not true. It's got a cost in like the designer has to lay it out. But if you're working on a website, you've got so much material that you could fill like a 100, 150 page magazine like PC World. Online content for a month would generate the equivalent of like 300 pages. It's not even close. And so we had a whole conversation about how much do we want to put in the digital edition. And the reason we were so careful about it is that we didn't want to overwhelm people. We wanted people to get through it, that there was value in making choices about what you got to see, that we weren't going to dump everything on you and make you wade through it. And
well,
that
back in the print days, you could you would get sometimes those really thick issues that you'd feel great about, but that's because you didn't have any other place else to get that content.
Exactly.
So
that's true.
I'm getting so much.
But the idea is leave them wanting more is the idea. Exactly. What we want to do is the sweet spot is it's just right. You get through it and you're like, that was great, and I'm done with it. And then I can't wait for the next one. And then the next one comes and you do the same. But if you start like having, I used to have this when I was getting paper magazines here, that I would have like a new issue would come, and I had like in my little box or by my nightstand, I'd have like the previous issue folded at somewhere in the middle where I had been reading up to, and I hadn't finished it yet. And that when those things start to pile up, or you declare bankruptcy and put them in the recycling bin and all that, that is a reason why you cancel. And I mention this because I feel like this is applicable to stuff that we are doing now. I think it's applicable to podcasts, and I think it's applicable to things like our membership thing, where we're putting out the Six Colors newsletter. I asked subscribers at one point, do you think that there's too much content, not enough content, or just enough content? And what I was surprised by is a fairly large number of people thought getting an email once a month is fine, and that if it came more often, they would feel a little bit overwhelmed. Like I've heard, and I've had several people say, I love getting it. I don't want to get it every week. I'm fine. Cause that would be an option for us, is to put more stuff into the subscription side, hide more stuff from the public in the free side. But that's the line that we have to walk, with something like Six Colors is, what do we offer, and are we overwhelming people? Now you can unsubscribe. I mean, if we did a new thing that was in parallel to this monthly thing, like what Max Stories does, they have a weekly and a monthly, I want to say. And you can kind of like choose what you want to see. It's just a mailing list. You can unsubscribe. So you can give people the option. But even then, I feel like you've got that issue of, you know, I'm paying for the subscription and then I'm turning off some of the things I'm getting. It's a choice. And on the podcast side, I feel this with not so much like episodes, but episode length, where one of the reasons that I've been trying to keep the average runtime of The Incomparable, which started at 60 minutes and gradually exploded, and there was a period in there where it was way over 90 minutes in the last, you know, the last few episodes, and I made an effort to push it back down toward 60 minutes, because I felt like I didn't want to outstay my welcome, and I wanted to leave them wanting more. And I didn't want people to, because I do that with some podcasts I subscribe to, that there's a 2.5 hour long episode, and I'm like, I'm never going to listen to that whole thing. And that often will lead me to dump podcasts for that same reason. Just, and again, it's not that I don't like the podcast. It's that I got tired of watching these huge episodes pile up and I could never get through them. So I just gave up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have an even more basic problem with podcasts is like just quantity and in addition to time, because the addition of not only are sometimes the episodes very long, but there are so many podcasts to listen to. It is overwhelming.
It's no mistake.
TV shows are a problem with that too, right?
Sure. It's no mistake that some podcasts you've seen launch recently, including some of mine, are fortnightly, are every other week. It's like, I'm kind of, part of that is workload related, where I don't want to have more, I want to do some more podcasts in different areas, but there's no way I'm going to commit to doing them once a week. And part of it is, I think that unless you're trying to be really newsy, really timely, give your audience a break. They'll hear from you and enjoy it, and they've got room to listen to other stuff too, and maybe they can fit you into their lives a little bit better. I mean, I think weekly is the best pace for a podcast, because everybody's life kind of works on a weekly pace. And we heard certainly right from people for Clockwise saying that if we missed it, or well, we never missed a week, but if like we were a day late or we were late, even like late in the evening because of something when we were recording, people noticed. And with Upgrade, I find that the same way. Like people, we published Upgrade a few hours late this week because Mike had to go to look at a potential wedding venue, and then come back and edit and post the show. So it was like 4 hours late. And there were tweets saying, where's Upgrade? So I see the value of weekly, but I don't know. That's one of the reasons I've warmed on the fortnightly thing. And then as for TV shows, yeah, I've seen a bunch of people talk about how somebody asked me, and I don't even remember what show it was, but it was a network show. It was like The Flash or something. And they said, I'm interested in watching this. How many episodes are there this season? Oh, 22? Forget it. Like, that's not a commitment they wanted to make. They wanted to make a 13 or 10 or 8 episode commitment. And I totally get that too.
It's a lot harder to sustain a 22 episode season, as we've seen, you know, from a lot of these shows. It's just it's much more difficult in this day and age when storytelling is so highly serialized. You know, you could do a Star Trek season of 26 episodes because a lot of them were standalone. And if you missed one, no big deal. You can't really miss an episode of so many of these shows these days.
Right.
You'll be lost.
And in fact, they're unmissable, mostly, especially on streaming. They're unmissable. So you don't need to fill 26 weeks plus reruns to get up to 52 weeks a year. You just, you know, you can get to it whenever. And if there are 10 of them or 12 of them or whatever, that's just fine.
There are more demands on our time. I mean, I think of the number of shows that I haven't yet seen that were big zeitgeist shows. I haven't watched Stranger Things. I haven't watched Westworld. Why? Because I just don't have the time.
I've got the entire season of Arrow on my DVR. The entire season of this year of Arrow.
And I had committed to that show long back, so I'm still watching that show every week, and I still like that show a lot. So, you know, there are certain things I'm watching. The inertia of getting started on a new show is much harder, especially because when I feel like I want to sit down and relax, I want to, like, go visit my friends, quote-unquote, who are on the TV show, not meet a whole bunch of new friends, because that just sounds a little overwhelming.
Yep.
So... yeah, these are the challenges of the modern era, where you have so much stuff that's available to you at any given time. And it's tough too as people creating that stuff, because you want to make your stuff stand out and feel worth the time, you know, that they're going to spend on that. You're not just competing with like other stuff in your genre, right? Like you're competing with stuff, podcasts are competing with time you spend reading or time you spend watching TV or going out to the movies. Like it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's true. And so when it comes to subscription stuff, I mean, it's a little bit different with subscriptions where it's because the way I always subscribed or described the Six Colors thing, because I had when I launched it, I had a couple of people. I mentioned Stephen Hackett, who launched his subscription thing this week, his support thing. I had somebody say, I don't see why this is worth $6 a month to get a newsletter and a podcast. And I wrote back and I said, well, as the description says on the site, this is really about supporting us doing the site and including giving away free content. And it allows the site to exist because we get to, as part of our jobs, basically task some percentage of our time to this that without support, we might not be able to. I said, think of it like supporting public television and you get a tote bag for $50. The tote bag doesn't cost $50. Nobody would buy that $50 tote bag. That tote bag costs $8 or something like that. But you spend $50 on it, or you buy back. I remember the old Doctor Who pledge breaks back in the day, and it'd be like, you can get this button and this book for $100. It's like, well, no, you're doing it to support the public TV station or the public radio station or whatever it is on the pledge drive. And that, right. So it's not quite fee for transaction. It's a little different.
No joke. For years, I had no idea how much a tote bag actually cost.
Yeah. That's true.
When would you ever buy one standalone?
Hundreds of dollars. You got your WGBH tote bags. Did you grow up with a lot of those?
Heck
I bet you did.
Oh yeah. My mom had a ton of those.
So, but I think when it is more direct fee for service, when it is your HBO subscription or your Netflix subscription or your magazine subscription to something, then you have to think about it. Although I still do think about it even for Six Colors, because I have felt that myself with some of the stuff I subscribe to, including some things I pay, which is, am I using this enough to justify paying for it? And the problem is, if I have time to read three of them a week, but I get five of them a week, the right way to look at it is probably that, yeah, I'm getting enough out of it, even if I don't read them all. But part of my brain says, man, you're throwing money away because you're not reading them all. But I'd miss it if I cancel the subscription. And I know that rationally, but there's another emotional part of me, an illogical part in my brain that's saying, but you aren't using it all. And if you can't use it all, then you're losing out. You're wasting your money. And it's not true, but it's there, and it's real consumer psychology. So it's something that I keep trying to think about. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing. That's the bottom line.
Some of it comes from the fact that there are so many instances in our life where we do sign up for things that are deliberately designed to, you're going to sign up and you're just going to stay signed up. I think of like gym memberships are a great example, right? Like we're so conditioned by our experiences with all of those and feeling like we are being taken advantage of, even though so many of us probably sign up for gym memberships or the like and don't go or use it nearly as much as we should. That we always are conditioned for everything that we subscribe to want to feel like I'm getting the most out of this subscription.
Totally. No, that was always, Pat McGovern, the founder of IDG, our former employer. Every senior meeting we would have, when it was like the board of directors meeting and I'd have to wear a suit and we'd sit in a room and Pat would be there. Every time he would, talk to our poor circulation director, because Pat, that was like a hobby of his, was circulation. And among the many things that would come out in these meetings every single time was his observation that what we really ought to be doing is getting their credit card and charging them monthly, because then they'd never feel it and it would go on forever.
Right.
And he was, this is a reason he was a billionaire and a successful businessman, is he was totally right. And now everybody's doing that. That's how it is, including us, right? Including us, because many of the people listening to this are paying us $6 a month. Please don't go away. We like that. It really is helpful. It allows us to do this. Or $60 a year. Give you a deal once a year. We're doing it.
There are a ton of people paying me $5 a month who don't even know they're paying me $5 a month. And I don't want to go into how exactly I've made that work. Let's just say scan your computers for malware.
Oh, dear.
That's not true.
Okay.
That was a funny joke. You get that for part of your subscription.
I'm just
fee.
Worried that they're convinced now that you're embezzling five of the $6 from Six Colors.
There's no way to be sure.
No, so, I guess not. I'll just check.
Keep circulating the tapes.
I'll check my bank account later. But, I do feel it's funny in this world of the tote bag kind of economy. I mean,
are we doing tote bags now? Is that what we're doing?
I haven't done a tote bag. Well, no, we're doing mostly it's digital tote bags. But for The Incomparable, I did the same thing, which is, I wanted most of the podcasts we do in The Incomparable are loved by listeners, but not big enough to have ads that bring in any money. There are some ads on some shows. They are a minor part of the equation. And I realized that we could like pay people to edit the podcast so that they could actually come out regularly and things like that if people could support us, because I figured the people who really love the show would want to support us. And that's worked out really well. But I also had in mind things that I wanted to be able to give them as member benefits. I didn't want to just be, please give us money because you like us. I want to be, you would, you, get something in return. It's not a huge thing. It's not the equivalent of fee. You know, you're not buying an object. You really are sending your love via money, but you do get something back, and that's part of the equation. You know, and so you want to be mindful of that. So I don't know. It's a funny world we live in. The truth of it is, the ugly truth of it is, especially on the written, you know, web side of things, the web words on a web page thing, is in order to create the web and get people to use it, everybody gave away everything for free and decided that the only way they could make money was by sticking ads on them. And then the ads got worse and worse and worse, and people built new tech to hide the ads. And we've got a situation now where, unless you are one of the hugest sites on the internet that or have a very specific niche, and even then, really, no, I mean, really, because that's the pay game. If you want to do the ad thing, you just got to have scale, and you got to be enormous. And even then, it's a very, very tough business to be in. And so what we've done is we've ruined that form. That form is kind of wrecked for anybody who's not BuzzFeed. And so we're in this transitional period where I hope we are going to find a way to someplace where things can be offered, where there's another business model, but
the hallowed land was always the hallowed land is still strong. Yeah. Microtransactions, right? For years, we would hear about those where it's like, oh, you'd pay a buck or two here and there for like something on the web, and it never really developed. And I think it was always because that technology was super clunky. It's gotten better. I mean, like payment stuff has streamlined somewhat since those early days of the web. But still, nobody wants to manage microtransactions for reading New York Times articles, right?
Exactly.
You don't want to worry about paying 50 cents for an article.
Well, and your credit card company doesn't want it, and the New York Times doesn't want you to do that. The New York Times would rather give you, I mean, the model with newspapers now is, we'll give you 10 articles a month or whatever. So if you're just drifting through the transom and you find an article on The Guardian, you can read it. And that's like me. I'm not going to subscribe to The Guardian, but I will occasionally read an article there when it's linked to from somewhere. All right, that's fine. But I'm not paying for that, but I am paying for the New York Times because I read more than 10 articles a month there, and I want to read. I like their little iPad app, so I do that.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, similarly, I think we're seeing, it's going to be interesting to see how that develops in the podcast space.
Yep.
You know, because that is an area where the ads are currently supporting a huge, invariably, as I'm sure you do, whenever you meet somebody and say, oh yeah, part of my job is I'm a professional podcaster. They say, you can make money off podcasts. And you explain to them, yes, some mostly on ads, but also on memberships and people supporting shows and networks directly, which is great. But, you know, that is becoming so big. Podcasting has become so much bigger over the last 5 years that, you know, sooner or later, you're probably going to run into a situation where the bottom falls out of that ad market, too.
Yeah, that's the danger. It's a growing. The difference with podcasts is it's growing. There's a huge potential audience that hasn't discovered it yet. And it's much harder to screw up the ad thing.
The mechanism is very limited in terms of how you can deliver an ad, as opposed to on the web where there's a bunch, like you can't do an overlay ad on a podcast, right?
No, there are your limit to what you can deliver, and it's very hard to get around those at all. There's a big limit in how you can measure, very hard to get around that. And
scale is still a problem in some ways, because if you have a show, I mean, so it depends on things like how long is your show, how many ads do you have in your show, in order to determine how much revenue your show can generate, which determines whether you can afford to do a show or not, right?
Yeah, so it's true, but podcasting has that going for it, is that a lot of the aspects of how about that medium as a very particular medium are in its favor. One thing that is not in its favor, but it hasn't been a problem yet, is like so much of the web, it was built on giving it away for free. And so there are paid podcasts or pay audio content, but generally that means you have to like get an app or log into a website somewhere in order to listen. You can't listen in your free, commonly available podcast app like the Apple Podcast app or Overcast. You can't. You have to get the Audible app or the Howl app or the Stitcher app, and then you get access to that content. Or if you want to be, you know, if you want to listen to the archive of Script Notes or the archive of WTF with Mark Maron, you got to get a special app. And then you can listen to those because they've walled those off. So that's not great, that there's no sort of like common way to just like, sure, this podcast you have to pay for and log into because of the way that the infrastructure was kind of implemented. So there's issues there too. But, you know, podcasting is in a much better place than the written word on the internet is right now in terms of having a viable ad market, because it does have one. And the written word thing, it's not so good. Not so good.
It's just too bad because it's not cheap to make those.
Well, no, and that's the problem, right? Is that there's a lot of free content out there. So even competing, this is when I was saying earlier, you either have to be scale or you have to be super niche. This is Ben Thompson at Stratechery, which I subscribe to for $100 a year, is great. One of the things that he writes about is this media dilemma, which is you either go for scale or you go for the niche. And you go for the niche market because that's the stuff you charge for. And the challenge is if you've got content that everybody has, and everybody's giving it away for free, it's awfully hard to charge for it. And yep. and really the only way you can charge for it is by what we're doing, which is say, well, you like our stuff and you want to get some bonus stuff, plus also keep the lights on at the site because you like the site existing. But another way I could have, and I didn't want to do this, which is why we haven't done it, but another way to go would be to say, you know, I'm closing the door and you can pay to get my stuff, and I would write a lot less, but it would be much more focused. And the idea there would be much more money for service, which is I'm going to write some really great analysis stuff. And if you want to see it, you got to pay me. And, you know, unfortunately, that may be where everything is going. But I don't want that business model. So I'm trying to make this hybrid thing work. But with podcasts, it's right now a lot easier. I look at podcasts and I think, why would I want to limit my podcast audience? I'd rather build things that everybody can listen to and try to build a big audience around them and go for some form of scale.
Yeah, no, I agree.
What a mess. Be back in the days when newspapers and TV stations just were licenses to print money. Good times.
Yeah, those were the days when you could just you could make a living being an author.
Yeah,
those were the days.
We get to play with all these fun toys in the 21st century. That's the upside.
That is true.
Did they have smartphones and drones and things back in the 40s? The newspapers? No.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And you can like talk to people on video chat and all sorts of fun stuff.
You can Skype, you can
have podcasts,
make podcasts.
That's right.
All right.
Couldn't do that before.
Oh, this is the part when I usually say thanks for keeping the lights on, but I think much of what we just talked about explains that we thank you for keeping the lights on. We appreciate you subscribing to Six Colors and listening to this podcast. And if you are pirating this podcast, you know, help us out. Subscribe, please. We miss you. Come back. Don't make me come over there. Something like that.
He'll do it.
Idle threats from a podcast. All right. Next week will be quieter, won't it, Dan?
Oh, yeah, nothing happening, right?
Right. Week after that's WWDC, that's going to be madness, but next week.
Oh, we'll do our predictions.
Oh, good. All right. So stay tuned for that, everybody out there. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.